The Flames Talk postgame show starts now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, let's get our Flames Talk postgame show underway on this Monday night. It's a 6-2 Flames loss on St. Patrick's Day. Bit of a St. Patrick's Day nightmare for the Flames on this Monday. And, just nothing really went their way this evening, and they didn't play themselves a very good game either. Flames Talk postgame, it's Pat Steinberg with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. The phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. And the text line open at 960-960. And let's say hello to Megan Mickelson, the color voice of the Calgary Flames as well, for a couple minutes following this 6-2 loss. Mick, how did this one get away on the Flames to the extent that it did tonight?
Well, I just mentioned to Wilsey, I actually think that it started with their morning skate. They were very sloppy on the ice this morning, and that's really where your preparation starts. And Ryan Huska talks about that all the time. And, you know, I remember I was sitting there watching, and my brother was there as well, and we were both kind of, you know, saying, oh, they better be better in the game than they are in morning skate. Outside of Nazem Kadri, who was he was on fire morning skate this morning. But just a lot of, like, missed passes. Their execution wasn't on. And to me, as a player, like, that's really where things start. But then you come into another team's building, a team that the narrative around here coming into this one after they had lost to the Ottawa Senators on Saturday, they're pretty fired up in that they were 2-4-1 in the month of March so far, and they were really hungry. They were ticked off, as head coach Craig Berube said. So you knew that they were going to come out guns a-blazing and ready to play. So you come into a building, you know, like this, and playing against a team that has that mindset and that mentality, and you give up the first goal. So, you know, that to me is where it, it starts with the morning skate, like I said, but then you give up the first goal. And then the goal that was overturned, like, that's a really tough one. The Flames, you know, found a way to hang in there. They should have gotten just blown out of the water after that first period, gave up way too many high danger chances. To me, just a lack of awareness and coverage overall. But Dustin Wolf was solid, and he kept them in it. And then, you get pretty close to tying it up. And then after that, it's just undisciplined, and the Leafs power play just absolutely goes to work. And I mean, at the end of the day, things just sort of spiraled from there. And as a player, you're just thinking that you want to get the game over with. And when your mindset gets to that point, you're never in a good space. So yeah, things just sort of cascaded, and to me, it starts with your preparation.
Yep. Our marquee matchup on tonight's pregame show, brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. Mick, we were talking about a real opportunity for the Flames to start off another difficult road trip on the right foot. Obviously, that doesn't happen. And so now you don't have much time, less than 24 hours between start times. You're into Madison Square Garden to take on a desperate Rangers team fighting for their playoff lives. What's important if you're the Flames to shake this one off and make it so that you can come out even from the first two games of this tough trip?
You have to have a really good start tomorrow. And I love Joel Hanley said that on a post-game interview with Wilsey. And to me, that is absolutely crucial. In one way, you flush this game and you move on, but it's still, to me as a player, when you step on the ice tomorrow, it still lingers in the back of your mind a little bit because it is so fresh. And you know that if you get scored on a couple quick ones early on in the game in Madison Square Garden, then that's going to be really, really tough to come back from. And if they're going to want to win that game, to me, they have to have a really strong start. And they have to score first. So you got to find a way to do that. But in order for the Flames to do that, I mean, the way that they find success is playing really good defensive hockey, checking really well, especially through the neutral zone, which they did not do at all, if I'm being completely honest, in this game tonight. There was no checking that happened in the neutral zone pretty much all night long. And then you kind of build your game from there and go to work. They're not going to score a bag of goals, but if they can score first and just sort of stick to their identity and the way that they need to play a hard checking game, They other teams talk about that so often. Craig Berube mentioned it this morning that the Flames are a hardworking team that are hard to play against. They were not that tonight. They need to be that tomorrow.
So that was our marquee matchup. And while the road trip doesn't get off on a good foot, they can at the very least make it a slightly better foot tomorrow against the New York Rangers. Marquee matchup brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. It's time to Toyota at the giant Country Hills Toyota. The 2024 Toyota truck and demo blowout is on. Get financing as low as 0% OAC with zero down and no payments until September 2025. Mick, just before we let you go, let's get a hardest working Flame in this one tonight, a 6-2 loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Which way are you leaning on a hardest working Flame this evening?
Well, yep. It's never good when when it's a tough night to pick the hardest working Flame. I'm scanning up and down the roster, and I mean it's tough when it's hard to pick one, but I actually thought Martin Pospisil had a pretty good game. He was physical. And was one guy who was not a liability when he was on the ice. He didn't take any stupid penalties. So to me, yeah, the bar is pretty low, Wilsey just said in the background. But I actually think Mackenzie Weegar. I'm going to go with Mackenzie Weegar. Okay, I've changed my tune. he had a pretty strong game, 22 minutes and 32 seconds. He had 8 shot attempts, a couple of hits as well. So I'm going to go with honorable mentions to Martin Pospisil and give it to Mackenzie Weegar.
Mackenzie Weegar, your hardest working Flame following this 6-2 loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Mick. Thank you, friend.
Thanks, Pat.
Megan Mickelson signing off as the Flames fall 6-2 this evening in Toronto. That's not the way they wanted to kick things off on this 4-game road trip, but they've got an opportunity to bounce right back on Tuesday night when they visit the New York Rangers. What's going on? It's Steinberg along with you. This is your Flames Talk post-game show on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Phone lines open, 403-240-4444. Text lines open at 960-960. It's time to go from the Flames dressing room now. Brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. And let's start things off by hearing from the head coach. Here's Ryan Huska post-game tonight after a 6-2 loss in Toronto.
So what's the biggest frustration on a night like tonight?
Well, the penalties that we took for me, I mean, a team that's power play has been really good. That was, you know, one of the number one keys. You don't want to give them opportunities. And I think in the second period, we took some poor penalties, 3 of them. And our penalty kill was not sharp tonight. So at the end of the day, I think that was, for me, the difference in the game. I didn't mind a lot of our game 5-on-5. I thought there were some things there that we can build off. But the penalties put us in a bad spot.
With the season he's had, was that more or less a mercy pull for Dustin?
I don't like the word mercy pull. I mean, he's played really well for us. He's given us a chance every time he's been in there at 5-1. We put a lot of hockey in a short period of time, and he's going to get a lot of games coming up. So it was just a decision we made to get Vladdy in there and get him ready for his next start.
It was his first time pulled all season. What does that say about the year that he's had?
It's pretty incredible, actually, when you look at the body of work that he's put in all year long. Like, he's been very, very consistent. For a young goaltender, that's something that you have to tip your hat to, because it doesn't happen all that often, really. So, hey, he's done a great job, and by no means was this on him tonight in that situation.
What effect did the goal of getting called back, you know, a 2-2 game at that point, if any, have on
it? Yeah, I don't think it did. I mean, of course, he'd like to score that goal and make it a 2-2 game, but we came back and hit the post right again after. So, hey, at the end of the day, it's the discipline. You take some poor penalties, and we were not able to kill those off.
What were your thoughts on that call itself? The offside looked pretty close.
It's offside. When you have video reviews on those challenges, they don't miss them on the offsides. It's the other ones they do. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thanks very much.
There you go. That is head coach Ryan Huska post-game tonight. A couple of things. He addressed the Dustin Wolf pull, said that wasn't on him. That was more of a situation where they got a lot of hockey coming up, so found this as an opportunity to maybe rest Dustin and get Dan Vladar some work. We'll see who gets the start on Tuesday against the New York Rangers. That'll be interesting to see. Also, no controversy from the head coach's side of things when it comes to the offside. I know that we didn't get a real conclusive view on the Amazon telecast, but Ryan Huska pretty convinced that was an offside goal, and those are black and white. So that's right from the head coach after that one. Let's also hear from Mackenzie Weegar. You know that Mackenzie always with his heart on the sleeve and is always going to shoot you straight after a win or a loss. This is Mackenzie Weegar post-game after a loss in Toronto as well.
Obviously, the disciplinary stuff in the second period. We knew they had a good power play, but... regardless, you know, if they're the best power play in the league or not, you know, we got to, be detailed in our structure. Those are momentum builders for us, too. So, we didn't step up to that challenge there. And that's sort of where it got away from us, in the first period as well. Just sometimes, the responsibility with the puck can lack a bit. We're playing a good team. We talked about them, back checking hard, getting under sticks and causing turnovers. So, Wolfie made some big saves for us in the first there to keep us at a 1-1 game, and I thought maybe in that second period that's when we would turn it up, but I thought those penalties got kind of stole that from us.
Yeah, it felt like maybe by the end, Rasmus obviously gets that late mm-hmm. goal, that maybe that could have been a shift or a turning point.
Yeah, absolutely. Came back in the dressing room feeling good, and going back out there for second period, big push from us. Generating more shots. I find in the first period lately, we haven't really been getting shots and getting the pucks back and generating some offense. That's another area where we got to pick it up from everybody. But, just that those penalties, they took off, and before you know it, the game was pretty much out of reach.
Did it, that 2-2, the goal calling, getting called back on the outside, how much did that play a role in maybe some momentum?
I mean, that happens quite a bit these days, the offside challenges and stuff like that. We still had, a minute 37 to get back out there and get another one. But obviously, it sucks. You never want to get a goal taken back. That would have been probably a big moment for us to keep that game, close 2-2. But, they kept capitalizing on their power plays.
Has been so good for you. Mm-hmm. I think this was his first time getting pulled this year. What does that say about the season he's had?
Oh, he's been incredible for us. He's our backbone back there. He's doing it all for us. He's making absolutely stunning saves, and he's got so much composure. It's too bad that coming into the hockey meta, we couldn't play a little bit better for him. When the bright lights were on, we kind of fall short in that area as well.
Some solace in the fact that you're 24 hours away from getting right back at it.
Get right back at it here. It's the biggest game of the year. It's a must win for us. I want everybody. I need more from everybody, including myself. We got to get out of this, and we're right back in a playoff spot if we win tomorrow night. So it's big.
There you go. That is Mackenzie Weegar post game following a 6-2 loss in Toronto. We'll see if that rallying cry gets answered, and if they can bounce back with a big one against a similarly desperate New York Rangers team on Tuesday night. That's our look from the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. Okay, your Flames Talk post-game show is well underway. Get your texts in at 960-960 or call now 403-240-4444. Would love to hear from you following this one this evening, an ugly one. 6-2, your final score. Maple Leafs sweep the season series. Combined score of 12-5 in the two head-to-head matchups between the Flames and Maple Leafs. But flush this one right into New York, Madison Square Garden, Tuesday night for a 5 o'clock face-off, and they're going to need a significantly better effort against a Rangers team that's fighting for their playoff lives as well. What's going on? My name is Pat Steinberg. Flames Talk postgame on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we continue next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Flames Talk postgame show continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Following a 6-2 loss on the road in Toronto this evening, and let's be honest, the score reflects the game. This was not one of those blowout scores where it wasn't indicative of how the game was played. In the first period, it was 1-1, and it should have been about 4-0 Toronto. Dustin Wolf was spectacular in the first period, and was the literally only reason why it wasn't already trending blowout after 20 minutes of play. The Flames were slightly better. In fact, not just slightly, they were significantly better in the middle frame in terms of their kind of the way that, like, the actual way the ice was tilted. Like, in that first period, it was all tilted Toronto's way. I thought the ice was a whole lot more even in the middle frame, but the Flames made some crucial mistakes, took some really silly penalties, the number one being that too many men on the ice, which, like, we heard the referee yelling too many for about 30 seconds before they finally blew it dead, and they couldn't kill a penalty. The final two penalty kills the Flames had in this game, they didn't touch the puck. And the Maple Leafs go 3-for-3 on the power play in the middle frame, and that ends up being a massive difference in this game. You don't have Michael Backlund on the penalty kill. I don't think there's any doubt that they are missing Backlund significantly in that area, maybe more than any other. But again, go take a look at the high dangers in this game. So first period, high dangers were 10-1 Toronto, and it's 1-1 after 20. Add 4-2 Maple Leafs in the second period, and the dam bursts at 6-2. And the Maple Leafs had a 14-3 edge in high dangers after 40 minutes of play. Like, that's just not going to get the job done. The Flames didn't deserve to be in this hockey game after 40. Now, very rarely have we seen nights like this. There's probably been four or five nights through 66 where the Flames have been this poor and have executed or failed to execute to the extent they did tonight, and now they've got to bounce back in a significant way, and we'll see if they can do that, as they don't have much time at all to dwell on this because they're right back at it Tuesday night against the New York Rangers. I am fascinated also to see what happens in net, because that's another big time storyline in this game. Time for the save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. No doubt about it, Dustin Wolf was the obvious choice to get the start in net, as he started his fourth consecutive game tonight and was, as we said, spectacular in the first period. And Dustin Wolf's save of the game comes in that period number one.
And now Tavares holds it in and centers it. Nylander dangles in, and Wolf knocks it down. It's loose, and he makes another spectacular save. Dustin Wolf keeping the Flames in this game. And now Coleman.
And so that ends up being, when it's all said and done, one of the 21 stops made by Dustin Wolf tonight. And that is his save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. For every save a Flames goaltender makes, Shane Holmes donates $5 to Kidsport Calgary. Visit ShaneHolmes.com, the better way to build. And so for the first time all season, the Flames pull a goaltender in game. In the first 65 games, the goalie who started the game was the goalie who finished the game. For the first time, that wasn't the case tonight. Wolf goes 40 minutes, allows 5 on 26. Vladar goes the final 20, allows 1 on 3 in a period that really didn't even need to get played. And I get it. I mean, you heard head coach Ryan Huska said a couple minutes earlier here on Flames Talk postgame that this was, he doesn't like the word mercy pull, but essentially this was, hey, we got a lot of hockey coming up. Wolf's got an opportunity to get ready for his next start, whether that's Tuesday or Thursday, and let's get Vladdy some, Vladar, some work. And it wasn't a lot of work. He only saw 3 pucks, but get him in, feeling it a little bit. He allowed 1 on his first shot, which, you know, you can almost understand coming in cold like he did, and I don't really put anything into anything I saw from either side in the third period. That was just a complete let's get the hell out of here period for both sides. But you can kind of understand it. Like, the game, the Flames weren't winning this game. There was no comeback in them. This was a pretty lopsided affair through 40 minutes of play. So get Wolf out of there. Let him reset mentally. And I can't remember a Flames goalie who has been better at resetting mentally than Dustin Wolf has been since number 34 was here. That includes Jacob Markstrom. The way Dustin Wolf is able to flush games and get right back into his preparation and not miss a beat is one of the things that makes me so bullish on him going forward, and why I think they've got a franchise guy. So I get the pull. I think that was actually the right call at that point. And then we'll see. I mean, I could see it going either way, but honestly, I still go Vladar against the Rangers tomorrow. And he got a little bit of work, got to feel the puck a little bit in this period, and then let him play against the Rangers on Tuesday, and then you're right back to Wolf against the Devils on Thursday. That's what I would do, but I don't know what the Flames will be doing, and I'm curious to see whether they tell us when they do their media availability in New York on Tuesday, or whether we find out come morning skate. I don't really know which way the Flames are going to go when it comes to their starting goaltender on Tuesday night. So text line time at 960-960. Let's get to it. Flames lose this one 6-2 in Toronto. And let's start with Mike, who says perhaps the mirage of the Flames making the playoffs is starting to dissipate. And we'll see. I mean, they win the game tomorrow. That is their game in hand on Vancouver. And if they win that game tomorrow in regulation, they're right back into a playoff spot via the tiebreaker. But of course, they would have to win that game in regulation for that to happen. But again, you win tomorrow and you're right back in it. There are 9 games on the NHL ice. Vancouver has Winnipeg, so a tough matchup for the Canucks. So if Vancouver loses their game, Calgary wins theirs, they're right back into a playoff spot, and that's not even a game in hand tomorrow on Tuesday. So are they going to make it? I don't know. Did this loss help them? Obviously not. And now the Flames have dropped to the team who is trailing in points percentage. They came in at 546 points percentage, one better than Vancouver at 545. They dropped to 538 with this loss tonight. But does that mean that that they're not going to make the playoffs? I mean, no, and I keep on saying it. As discouraging as this last stretch has been, as discouraging as this 60 minutes was in Toronto tonight, and as rough as the road looks without Michael Backlund, they do get Connor Zeri back against the Rangers, which will be a little bit of a boost. And every time that we think the Flames are dead and buried this season, they come back and show us they're not. We'll see if that can continue to be the trend with 16 games to go. Here's Murray in the Ranchlands. You can't tell me that lengthy offside challenges are good for the game. Even though everything after the challenge went Toronto's way, it completely sucked the life out of the building. Let's see if the Flames can reset and do better with Zeri back in the lineup tomorrow. Javier says, okay, Pat, I take back what I said about Backlund. They need him. Can't believe the Flames with such great potential. No one is willing to step up in that leadership role. It doesn't help the refs bleed blue, but they need to be more disciplined. If you get that many penalties, you're going to get burnt, pun intended. There's plenty of game left to make the playoffs, but they need to clean up their game and start putting more pucks on net. I read a quote the other day, not sure who said it, but should know that they'll miss 100% of the shots they don't take. Of course, that is Wayne Gretzky, not Michael Scott. As for the refereeing being slanted one way, I don't know. The Flames ended up with more power plays than Toronto did tonight. One of Calgary's power plays was the easiest too many men on the ice that you'll ever call, so that's not slanted. Kadri's was a clear impediment call and had one hand on the player. In that case, it was Mitch Marner, so that one was a pretty easy one to call on the hook. 9 seconds in, they're going to call that all day, every day. And then the Pahal one was a little bit of a snapback on Pontus Holberg. And anytime a referee sees a head going back, they usually are going to call a rough. So I didn't really have a problem with the officiating. The only thing that you might not be happy about is the offside review. And you heard Ryan Huska say it. All we saw was two angles on the Amazon telecast. The NHL, and I'm not trying to sit here and say that it was conclusively offside, because I don't know. The two angles that I saw did not show conclusively offside. I saw the same ones you did watching at home, but the NHL does have other angles that we don't see on TV. And so I'm going to trust that that was conclusively offside, but the angles that we saw, as it is now a black and white rule, for the longest time it wasn't. So I'm going to trust that they got this one right, but I can understand the frustration, because what we saw on the telecast was not very impressive at all. What else we got here at 960-960? 4 to 5 crappy games is what it usually comes down to make the playoffs. We usually hear if they could have won just 2 or 3 more, They can't have crappy games. It's just too competitive of a league. This effort should never have happened. Zero excuses. Poor Wolf. This was his chance to showcase himself to the East. Sucks for him. That comes from Kelly in Copperfield. Steve in Zurich, Ontario says, unfortunately, I'll have to hear about this at work tomorrow. I feel they lost a lot of momentum losing Backlund and Jerry. Good thing I didn't go to the game. What else we got here at 960? This from Blair. I've been cheering this team all year, and ever since they arrived in Calgary tonight, they showed no emotion, no want, and how is Sharon Govich even in the lineup? He continues to be out there for a Sunday skate, and Klapka looked like he was a huge lost player. Now, that being said, there is no way they could be sure that was offside. 2-2, and who knows? I'll never hope for the Leafs to win a cup. I hate everything about that organization. Again, from what we saw on the telecast, yes, that was not conclusive, but again, I do know the NHL has significantly more angles. I don't know why we weren't showing more. I can't speak to that, but if they're going to wave it off at that point, I do believe they're going to have conclusive evidence that shows that this was an offside goal. Now, what I do agree with is that it really took the wind out of Calgary's sails, but I mean, they had a couple other forays on that power play, and they still had, I believe, 97 seconds of power play time after the goal got waved off. You buck up, you get right back to it, you shake it off, maybe you can still tie it. They don't. Leafs have the one goal lead and then kind of pulled away from there. What else we got here at 960? This says, Pat, I think it's time for the Flames to shut Sharon Govich down for the rest of the season. He's clearly not right. He looks hesitant to engage in puck battles and seems afraid to take contact. It's seriously hurting the team more than helping. His shot, which is supposed to be his biggest weapon, has become a non-factor because he can't put any pressure on it. If he's playing through something, it's time to sit him out rather than letting him struggle and drag the team down. What do you think? Now, I don't know for certain I've known for certain for quite some time that Michael Backlund's been playing through something. I don't know right now, as we're talking on March 17th, I don't know for certain if Yegor is playing through something that is severely hampering him. I agree with the text that suggests that he doesn't look right and hasn't looked right really at any point this season. As for shutting him down, if we are talking about a guy that is playing through something, which I could absolutely see. I can't sit here and tell you that I know for certain on that one. If he is playing through something, then yeah, especially with Zeri coming back, it might be a time to start thinking about, and if you're not going to shut him down for the rest of the season, maybe you can shut him down temporarily. It's not like you're losing a huge asset if you do because of the way he's playing this year. And maybe if it's only a week or two, that can give him a little bit of a step forward. So it is absolutely something that I would think about for sure. And as if we're talking right now, I'll check in a little bit and maybe we'll have a little bit more for Tuesday's game. But if he is playing through something that is significantly hampering him, then yeah, I think it's a valid conversation. This from Andy usually gives us nice lengthy text. Not tonight. Three words, Pat, sigh, pathetic. This from Dylan and Revy. This really showed the importance of Backlund. Not saying they would have won with him, but I think the PK wouldn't have been this bad. Hope your evening isn't that long tonight. That comes from Dylan and Revy. Few areas where they would have absolutely been better off if Backlund was healthy. In the faceoff dot, where they were just 29% tonight. Frost went 5-7. Sharon Govich went 3-7. Kadri was killed. He went 4-15. Maple Leafs were 71% in the faceoff dot tonight, so that's obviously not going to get the job done. Their penalty kill faceoffs, defensive zone faceoffs, faceoff wins, period, and in the head-to-head game. I mean, Flames had a real hard time with all of Toronto's forwards, but the fact that, you know, at 5-on-5, they were generally able to saw off and limit the Matthews line and the Tavares line, but then they get crushed by the Domi line. I think that tells you right there that they missed Michael Backlund significantly. If Backlund's playing, that third line of the Maple Leafs, the Domi line probably doesn't eat the way they did tonight. And finally from Dale, watch me only talk about the positives from this one. Weegar is the clear heir to the captaincy throne when Backlund eventually retires. Every team has one team that has their number. This year it was the Leafs. Luckily, only play them twice. 6-2 and 2-0 losses go into the same column. Hopefully this was just a rude awakening for them. And it's a good point by Dale. I mean, 6-2 stings. It's a beatdown, but it's only 2 points lost, and it's only 2 points gained by the other team. It counts the same way as every other one does in the standings. Okay, great stuff on the text line at 960-960. Keep them coming on this Monday night. Flames fall 6-2. This is your Flames Talk post-game show on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. If you are listening live, you can call now, 403-240-4444. Got a couple of lines open if you want to chat on this Monday night, or keep your text coming at 960-960. My name is Pat Steinberg, and let's get to it on the phone lines right now. We say hello to George to kick us off tonight. What's up, George?
Happy St. Paddy's Day. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I'm okay. I hate losing to Toronto. I've always hated losing Toronto, but I hate it way more now because of who their GM is, the man who sent this franchise into the dark ages. I'm not happy about that. I'll start off by saying I feel awful for Dustin Wolf. He was making heroic saves in the first period, and then the game got out of hand and totally messed up his numbers. And, I feel bad for him. He's the one person on the team that did not deserve that tonight. But alas, it happened. And I'm curious now to see if they will play him next game or tomorrow night. I would play Vladar, not because of what happened to Wolf.
It's still the second half of back-to-back. He's still got a ton of work in 40 minutes. It's still a tight turn. I mean, one period off, to me, doesn't mean that you just abandon your back-to-back plan. But I have no idea what way they're going to go. I just personally, I would be going Vladar against the Rangers, and then you've got Wolf ready to rock on Thursday against the Devils.
Yeah, so would I. So would I. If that was the plan originally, I'd stick with it. Even if it wasn't, I'd still go Vladar back-to-back. We'll see. I don't know, man. It just, after tonight especially, it seems like the playoffs are a fading hope at this point. That had to have been a demoralizing game for everybody involved. And it's just, that's a game in hand lost. Now it's a four-team race. It's Vancouver looks like they're getting it back. St. Louis isn't going away. Who knows if Utah, they're a wild card. We don't have Backlund now. This team already can't score. Our penalty kill is actually going to get destroyed now because of Backlund missing. I mean, that's a big factor. I'm just not feeling a lot of hope making the playoffs. And it's disappointing because I did. The way the season was going and the way they were playing, I was so proud of it and still am. And I did, Patty. I did want them to make the playoffs. A, because of the way they were playing, and B, because of the whole draft pick thing. My mentality has always been, we're going to give that draft pick to Montreal. Might as well make the playoffs. Even if we get wrecked in the first round, at least you get in. Some of the young guys can have some playoff experience, But it looks less and less like that's going to happen now, and we're going to give that pick to Montreal.
I mean, there's still 16 games to go. They're still only 2 points back. They still have a game in hand and will remain with a game in hand after tomorrow's game in New York. So, all of a sudden, Vancouver loses to Winnipeg on Tuesday night and Calgary beats the Rangers. Flames are back in the driver's seat. And I'm not suggesting that it's going to be easy or they're a shoe-in or they're a guarantee. All I'm saying is that with 16 games to go, to just be like, oh, no, Flames are cooked, that seems rather premature.
I understand what you're saying, and you make a point. At the same time, what scares me and has scared me since the Four Nations face-off finished was the strength of schedule, right? Out of the four teams in the race right now, we have the hardest schedule. And not only do we have the hardest schedule, we already can't score. So now you're playing these teams that are much harder level of difficulty compared to the other teams that you're in the race with. And it sounds like a recipe for disaster. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. And I very well could be wrong because it is kind of premature. But I'm starting to get that feeling. I really am. So I hope I'm wrong. Believe me, I hope I'm wrong.
Well, here's what I'm quite confident in this race isn't going to be decided in the next 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm not understanding at this point why Zirinkovic is even seeing the ice right now. It's actually starting to anger me to watch him play. Whether there's an injury we don't know about or whether there's a confidence thing or whatever, he needs to be scratched. I'm sorry. He's actually hurting the team right now. I swear. He's a liability. It's one thing if you go out there and you don't do anything, but he's actually a liability at this point. I would much rather have Klapka in. I would much rather even call somebody else up and play. Like, I'm at that point with Zirinkovic right now. It's just, it's becoming very frustrating to watch him play this year. I really think the guy just needs, this is an off year. I've talked about it before, and hopefully he can come back fresh and renewed next year, because it's just, it's getting worse and worse with every game with this guy.
Let's see what happens on Tuesday against the Rangers. I would imagine they probably put Zeri down the middle, as opposed to Zirinkovic, because, I mean, he was eaten alive in his two games at center with both Zeri and Backlund out. So wouldn't be a stunner at all if we see Zeri move back to the middle and they go with Kadri, Frost, Zeri, Rooney down the middle, have Zirinkovic on the wing playing with Kadri. That limits it a little bit. That might push one of Hunt or Klapka out of the lineup. If we are talking about a significant injury or one that is truly hampering his play significantly, then I think that there is an interesting conversation to have about shutting him down for a little bit. I don't know for a fact whether or not that's the case, so I can't say definitively, but I think you probably take him away from center at the very least for the game against the Rangers.
Oh, 100%. I don't think he needs to see the center ice position again for a long, long time, period. Did you happen to see the Athletics ownership ranking poll and where the Calgary Flames placed?
I didn't, and with no disrespect to anybody, like, I don't, it's kind of hard for me to comment on, A, something I didn't see, and B, you know, kind of a subjective poll like that. But no, I did not see it. And honestly, I don't know where the Flames rank in that respect.
Yeah, I understand. Well, we won't get too much into it, but I will say that I don't know if it was fan voted or not, I'll be honest, but according to that poll, they placed 30th out of 32. Murray Edwards did not get a very good rating, and look, we've had this discussion for years. Robert is the biggest proponent of this, and I honestly understand why. And this season is what it is, Patty. No matter what happens. I have applauded the effort to this point. They just don't have the talent. They don't. They can't score. The second half of the season, it's been really bad. Their goal scoring wars, like really bad. Like, I feel like they scored more goals when it was the Young Guns era. It seems that bad. So this season is what it is. Whatever they play is fine. You know, it's what it is. But I see games like tonight. I see games like Colorado and other games throughout the season where we've played elite teams and we have been completely mismatched against them. And it always comes to my mind, should Conroy and Iginla have a serious conversation with Murray Edwards about the direction of this team going forward and seriously think about like what they need to do to get elite talent? Because we're at a point where if you don't get that, we're going to go into that new building and have a team that's like middling. I know a lot of fans aren't going to like that. And I don't know. I don't know how we're going to make this team a Stanley Cup contender if we don't do it an actual rebuild, you know. And I'm not trying to flip flop or anything like that, but I'm just trying to put facts in front of everything because it's going to be real difficult. I mean, I feel like we have the goalie. We very well may have the defenseman in Zane Parekh because that guy's doing, he literally made history, right? And you hope that translates to the NHL. You really do. But you cannot, like, what he's done in the OHL this year is very impressive. It's actually turned a lot of heads. So hopefully he's one of, you know, hopefully he's our stud defenseman going down the road. But we have to have that center. And we have to have that winger. And if it's not that winger, at least an elite winger. Like, we have to at this point. I don't see how we're going to do anything of significance in the future if we don't have actual elite pieces, you know?
Well, again, as I've said, I mean, I know that so Murray didn't rank high on the ownership and Flames ownership didn't rank high on the Athletic poll. Okay. But I will say on the Conroy front that we are talking about a guy like at this point, like has Conroy not traded away Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin, Elias Lindholm, Jacob Markstrom, Andrew Mangiapane, and I'm probably Tyler Toffoli. Like, has he not traded away all of these guys for not a lot of help in the immediacy? Like, all for younger players, most of the case, all for draft picks. Like, if we're talking about rebuilding or not rebuilding, aren't every single one of those moves of the rebuild variety or you know, go in a younger direction variety? So I get what you're saying, and I agree with you in principle that I don't think you can win a Stanley Cup unless you find your elite players. I agree, and I also agree the best way of finding those elite players is by drafting high. Like, there's no doubt about that. But I guess what I'm saying is, has Craig Conroy not already shown that he is willing to take this team in a different direction? And yes, they're having more success than many people thought they were going to have this year, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that all of a sudden they're going to stop looking ahead to the future here just because they might be having more on ice success than maybe anyone internally or externally thought they were going to have.
He has, and that's why I didn't once mention Conroy. Conroy's doing what he said he was going to do. I do feel like Murray Edwards, and he's been doing it for a long time, has prohibited this franchise for a long time of doing what it actually really needed to do in the past. Conroy, I feel like with what he's been given, has done a good job. I will not sit here and criticize. Like, he hasn't made perfect moves, of course, but he's kept his word, and he's done everything you said. That's why I didn't bring up Conroy. That's why I brought up the owner, because it's always been ownership that's had this idea in their heads that, well, we still got to get revenue, we still got to make money, we still need to, you know. And it's just there's a certain way to be competitive, and there's a certain way not to be competitive. And sometimes you got to suck really bad and finish top bottom three. And if fans don't come to the games for 1 year, you bite the bullet on it. What did they do to not, what point did they?
They're here because their young goalie is having a Calder Trophy, maybe Vezina Trophy type season.
Also very true.
Like what? Mm-hmm. I'm not even trying to say that you're right or wrong or anything like that on the ownership front. I'm not trying to suggest that at all. I'm just trying to figure out, George, like where did they repeat history this year?
They didn't. They have gone a different direction. Like I said, this year is what it is. They're not going to finish bottom five. It's not going to, and that's fine.
And I bring that up only because I do think Craig Conroy has been able to convince ownership to do things differently than it's been done in the past. Is it a full rebuild? Well, no, obviously not. But you can't sit here and say that it's not significantly different than what we've seen in the past. And that's why I keep saying, I don't know if it's going to work out. I don't know if they're ultimately going to get to where they want to go and become an actual Stanley Cup contender. I don't know. But what I do know is that this is different than the way it's been in the past. And they have gone significantly younger. And I myself continue to be very intrigued by what Craig Conroy is attempting to do here. And in his first real full year of doing this, I want to see where this thing goes.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be honest. If it wasn't for Dustin Wolf, we would be a bottom five team. I truly believe that in my heart. I almost had a little bit of an epiphany today driving home thinking, if they would have put him in the minors, then we would have probably had that top three pick this year. And I say that jokingly, because obviously the kid doesn't deserve that. But it's, I know there's a player named Gavin McKenna coming up in 2026, and I would love to see him in a Flames jersey. But you know, you can always dream, right? But yeah, but you're right, Patty. I'm not, like I said, I'm not criticizing Conroy. I'm really not. He has done everything he said he's going to do. He's
and
been
again,
honest.
I'm not suggesting that they're. I'm not suggesting they've done everything right or their rebuild is complete or anything like that. All I'm saying is that he's been very adamant. We got to move on here, George. But he's been very adamant that this is a 3 to 5 year plan. And it's year one of it. So to be saying that it's the same old, just because Dustin Wolf has been good for like 10 standings points this year on his own, I find that a little bit unfair. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. Listen, my man, thank you very much. I hope you have a good night. We'll probably talk after tomorrow night's game.
Okay, George, good to hear from you, pal. 403-240-4444. That's your phone number following a Flames 6-2 loss on the road in Toronto. Let's say hello to Thomas. What's going on, Thomas?
Not much, Pat. That was a tough game, but it's good to be talking to you now. How's your night going?
It's going all right, man. How about yours?
Yeah, it is what it is. This is going to happen in the NHL season, especially when your team isn't one of the more talented in the league and you go up against the Leafs with their firepower. There's just a possibility.
And I mean, it was a Leafs team. It was a Leafs team that was pretty motivated tonight too. They have not been happy with their last few games. So you also kind of ran into a bit of a buzzsaw Maple Leafs team, which doesn't help the cause either.
No. It always really sucks losing to the Leafs because now we get to hear about this on national media. That would have been a nice showcase for Wolf, who I thought was actually really good in his performance, even though he let in 5. But say, Libby, enough about the game, though. I kind of wanted to talk big picture tonight, maybe give you a little break from people frustrated with tonight's game specifically. I guess I should preface this by saying that I'm not of the opinion that Michael Backlund is washed or he's done or he's no longer an effective NHL player. I still think he's a very good two-way center, and he's still a net positive on an NHL team, even at his at his age of around 35. That's kind of my
he just turned 36 today.
Oh, look at that. Oh yeah, I saw the Flames post something about that. That was nice. But anyways, I still think he's an effective player even at his age. But I also think it is kind of fair to say that he's had a bit of a down year by his standards. Whether that's partly the injury or he's getting a little bit older. And he's starting to age a little bit. He's had a bit of a down. I think two things can be true. He's had a bit of a down year by his standard, but he's still an effective player. But I wanted to ask you about what do you think about the Flames' kind of NHL center depth going forward? Because I also believe that I think Zary's shown enough this year before he got hurt that I think he should be playing at center. So, with that being the case, the Flames have Kadri, Backlund, Zary and Frost in the fold for at least next year. And how do you kind of see the center rotation lining up?
Well, I do agree. Like offensively, Backlund's numbers have taken a bit of a dip, and at the age of 35, now 36, I don't know if that is the largest surprise. I do not think he has missed a beat though, when it comes to the shutdown and the head to head and defensive side, the two way part of his role. You know, the one part of being a two way center has maybe taken a slight step back offensively, but the other side, he has been as good as ever in terms of the way he drives the play, who he elevates on his line and who he goes head to head with. I think he is, you know, as important now as he has been for most of his time as a member of the Flames. And I think that you're seeing what life is like without him the last couple of days. Now, as for their center depth going forward, I'm not in love with it. You've got Nazem Kadri, who's 34 and will be 35 next year, I believe. You've got Backlund, who just turned 36 on this March 17th. You've got Morgan Frost, so Kadri will turn 35 to start next season. He's an October birthday, so he'll be 35 next year. Backlund will be 36 and 37 next year in the final year of his contract. Frost is 25 and soon to be 26. And then you've got Rooney and maybe, and I don't think Rooney's back next year. So you've got Zary, Frost, Kadri, Backlund under contract. You've also got, I guess, organizationally, Bishop. You've got Morton, maybe Hanzek. I guess what I would say, it's not an area of strength. That's why they made the deal to go get Frost, to give them a little bit of a younger NHL center. But they don't have a number one center of the future as it stands right now. They don't have a guy that you're like, well, yes, this is clearly a center iceman they will absolutely be building around going forward. I like Frost. I'm with you on Zeri. I think long-term he's a center on this team too. But yeah, the depth, Kadri and Backlund are closer to the ends of their, as effective as they both still are and are still outstanding hockey players and two of the most important players on this team, they are closer to the end of their careers than the beginning. That's just a fact. So, yeah, I'm not in love with their center depth at all right now. It's the biggest area of weakness in this organization. And honestly, it's not close, Thomas.
Yeah. Had this idea in their head that, well, we still got to get revenue. We still got to make money. We still need to, you know. And it's just there's a certain way to be competitive and there's a certain way not to be competitive. And sometimes you got to suck really bad and finish top bottom three. And if fans don't come to the games for 1 year, you bite the bullet on it.
They're here because their young goalie is having a Calder Trophy, maybe Vezina Trophy type season.
Also very true.
Like what? Mm-hmm. I'm not even trying to say that you're right or wrong or anything like that on the ownership front. I'm not trying to suggest that at all. I'm just trying to figure out, George, like where did they repeat history this year?
They didn't. They have gone a different direction. Like I said, this year is what it is. They're not going to finish bottom five. It's not going to, and that's fine.
And I bring that up only because I do think Craig Conroy has been able to convince ownership to do things differently than it's been done in the past. Is it a full rebuild? Well, no, obviously not. But you can't sit here and say that it's not significantly different than what we've seen in the past. And that's why I keep saying, I don't know if it's going to work out. I don't know if they're ultimately going to get to where they want to go and become an actual Stanley Cup contender. I don't know. But what I do know is that this is different than the way it's been in the past. And they have gone significantly younger. And I, myself, continue to be very intrigued by what Craig Conroy is attempting to do here. And in his first real full year of doing this, I want to see where this thing goes.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be honest. If it wasn't for Dustin Wolf, we would be a bottom five team. I truly believe that in my heart. I almost had a little bit of an epiphany today driving home thinking if they would have put him in the minors, then we would have probably had that top three pick this year. And I say that jokingly because obviously the kid doesn't deserve that, but it's, I know there's a player named Gavin McKenna coming up in 2026, and I would love to see him in a Flames jersey, but, you know, you can always dream, right? But, yeah, but you're right, Patty. I'm not criticizing Conroy. I'm really not. He has done everything he said he's going to do. He's
and
been
again,
honest.
I'm not suggesting that they're, I'm not suggesting they've done everything right or their rebuild is complete or anything like that. All I'm saying is that he's been very adamant. We got to move on here, George, but he's been very adamant that this is a 5-year plan. And it's year one of it. So to be saying that it's the same old, just because Dustin Wolf has been good for like 10 standings points this year on his own, I find that a little bit unfair. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. Listen, my man, thank you very much. I hope you have a good night. We'll probably talk after tomorrow night's game.
Okay, George, good to hear from you, pal. 403-240-4444. That's your phone number following a Flames 6-2 loss on the road in Toronto. Let's say hello to Thomas. What's going on, Thomas?
Not much, Pat. That was a tough game, but it's good to be talking to you now. How's your night going?
It's going all right, man. How about yours?
Yeah, it is what it is. This is going to happen in the NHL season, especially when your team isn't one of the more talented in the league and you go up against the Leafs with their firepower. There's just a possibility.
And I mean, it was a Leafs team. It was a Leafs team that was pretty motivated tonight too. They have not been happy with their last few games. So you also kind of ran into a bit of a buzzsaw Maple Leafs team, which doesn't help the cause either.
No, it just always
it always really sucks losing to the Leafs, because now we get to hear about this on national media. That would have been a nice showcase for Wolf, who I thought was actually really good in his performance, even though he let in five. But say, Libby. Enough about the game, though. I kind of wanted to talk big picture
tonight,
maybe give you a little break from people frustrated with tonight's game specifically. I guess I should preface this by saying that I'm not of the opinion that Michael Backlund is washed or he's done or he's no longer an effective NHL player. I still think he's a very good two-way center, and he's still a net positive on an NHL team, even at his at his age of around 35. That's kind of my
he just turned 36 today.
Oh, look at that! Oh yeah, I saw the Flames post something about that. That was nice. But anyways, I still think he's an effective player even at his age. But I also think it is kind of fair to say that he's had a bit of a down year by his standards, whether that's partly the injury or he's getting a little bit older and he's starting to age a little bit. He's had a bit of a down – I think two things can be true. He's had a bit of a down year by his standards, but he's still an effective player. But I wanted to ask you about what do you think about the Flames' kind of NHL center depth going forward? Because I also believe that I think Zary's shown enough this year before he got hurt that I think he should be playing at center. So with that being the case, the Flames have Kadri, Backlund, Zary, and Frost in the fold for at least next year. And how do you kind of see the center rotation lining up?
I do agree, like offensively, Backlund's numbers have taken a bit of a dip, and at the age of 35, now 36, I don't know if that is the largest surprise. I do not think he has missed a beat, though, when it comes to the shutdown and the head-to-head and defensive side, the two-way part of his role. You know, the one part of being a two-way center has maybe taken a slight step back offensively, but the other side, he has been as good as ever in terms of the way he drives the play, who he elevates on his line, and who he goes head-to-head with. I think he is, you know, as important now as he has been for most of his time as a member of the Flames. And I think that you're seeing what life is like without him the last couple of days. Now, as for their center depth going forward, I'm not in love with it. You've got Nazem Kadri, who's 34 and will be 35 next year, I believe. You've got Backlund, who just turned 36 on this March 17th. You've got Morgan Frost, so Kadri will turn 35 to start next season. He's an October birthday, so he'll be 35 next year. Backlund will be 36 and 37 next year in the final year of his contract. Frost is 25 and soon to be 26. And then you've got Rooney and maybe, and I don't think Rooney's back next year. So you've got Zary, Frost, Kadri, Backlund under contract. You've also got, I guess, organizationally, Bishop. You've got Morton, maybe Hanzek. I guess what I would say, it's not an area of strength. That's why they made the deal to go get Frost, to give them a little bit of a younger NHL center. But they don't have a number one center of the future as it stands right now. They don't have a guy that you're like, well, yes, this is clearly a center iceman they will absolutely be building around going forward. I like Frost. I'm with you on Zary. I think long-term he's a center on this team too. But yeah, the depth, Kadri and Backlund are closer to the ends of their, as effective as they both still are and are still outstanding hockey players and two of the most important players on this team, they are closer to the end of their careers than the beginning. That's just a fact. So, yeah, I'm not in love with their center depth at all right now. It's the biggest area of weakness in this organization. And honestly, it's not close, Thomas.
Yeah. I guess, like, I fully agree with you organizationally. And I think, like, heading into the draft, like, center and I'd say left defense would be right behind it. But center is obviously the team's biggest organizational need. I'm kind of having a hard time fitting the pieces of the puzzle together for next year when Ideally, I think you could have all four of those guys.
I think you could probably, I mean, first of all, we don't know what happens in the offseason. Maybe there would be a trade and one of those centers is no longer on the team. That could, like, you can't write that off. But let's assume that doesn't happen for the sake of this conversation. Well, then I think you're looking at it and you say to yourself, well, then in that case, Zary probably uses some wing depth because it's not like they've got the greatest. It's not like we're talking about a ton of depth on the wing either. You know, Huberto, Coronado, both strong and have both had generally good seasons. Farabee's a middle six winger. But I think Zary on the wing gives you some nice middle six options. And I think that probably, as it stands right now, is your best bet of having. I don't think they bring back Rooney. I think they either look externally or they see if they can promote internally as that number four center next year, or use internally. Maybe it's a guy like Pospisil. I don't know, but I think that your three centers next year, with no player movement, are Kadri, Backlund, and Frost, and then you probably have Zary on the wing unless a move is made.
That all makes perfect sense. And barring any move, I think that's probably what they'll do too. I'd just like to see Zary at center sooner rather than
and
later.
And I think so we will. I think we will.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess especially tomorrow we'll probably see it. Okay. That all makes sense.
Yeah. You know what? That's probably fact that, like, I don't think you can have another minute of Sharangovich down the middle. So
yeah,
I think you move Zary to the middle on Tuesday night for sure.
Yeah. Do I have some time to ask a quick question?
Sure.
Zane?
Yeah.
So I've heard you talk about how, like, it's going to be a huge priority to, if Zane is ready, they'll do what it takes to give him ice time in the NHL next year. He's still be a 18, 19 year old trying to play in the NHL as a defenseman. Like, what if he isn't ready? Like, and he can't go to the AHL?
Yeah.
And I personally believe, like, at no, like, there should, you can absolutely not send him back to the OHL. It would start hurting his development. Do you think, like, a loan to a European team would be a possibility or something they consider?
I don't think it's fully out of the question, but, like, you know, I've thought about that. With a player that important, I don't think you want another league, let alone another team, to be like, because those European leagues are all about winning too, right? So if you loan them to, say, Sweden, because you're not loaning them to the KHL. So if you loan them to the best European league and he goes to Sweden, well, okay, great, but then that Swedish team doesn't care about what Calgary wants him to work on. They don't care about his development. They care about winning games. And so, and I mean, I guess that's a blanket statement that doesn't necessarily, isn't fully black and white, but I think generally that would be the rule. I think if you're the Flames, you want to have your hands on him. You want your staff and your people to be with him. And, you know, I think, and it's different positions, but I don't think the Leo Carlson example is a bad one when it comes to what we might be talking about Parekh. Because part of the problem with Parekh is that, you know, he's put on some good size this season, but he's still going to be pretty undersized next year. And the fact that he can't play in the American League sucks, but it is what it is. So Leo Carlson's first year, the Anaheim Ducks, for similar reasons, didn't play him every night. They did the old NBA load management with him, sat him out, healthy scratched him some games for physical reasons. I wonder if, like, I almost feel like we're like, I would say I'm 80-20 that we're talking about Parekh in the NHL next year. I really do believe that. And then if it doesn't work and it proves at some point that the NHL is way over his head, then I think that maybe they would send him back to the OHL, similar to what the Oilers did with Draisaitl midway through his first season in the NHL. But I think the NHL is probably the most likely bet, and I think the European idea, while I get it, I think the Flames would much rather have their people with him all the time. That's a long answer for a pretty easy short answer. I spoke a lot there. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I would just say it's a really difficult question because it's like
it is, and it's there, a fair like your no it's a fair question, right? It sucks that he has completely outgrown Major Junior, but it also sucks that there's no way for him to play in the American League until the end of his Major Junior season. So it's kind of a conundrum for sure.
And I don't really think, I don't think there's one clear answer. I mean, the only clear answer is if he's like fully ready to play in the NHL, then you don't have a question at all. But I think that's just a lot to ask of him because he'll still be so young for a defenseman. I mean, if he is ready, then great, problem solved. But if he isn't, it's going to be a very difficult problem to try and solve, I think, if he's not quite ready for the NHL. That's all for me. I'll let you get on to other callers, but thanks for taking my call tonight.
All right, good stuff, Thomas. You be well, man.
Yeah, you too.
Continue along on the phone lines at 403-240-4444 following a 6-2 Flames loss in Toronto. Let's say hello to Niels. What's going on, Niels?
Well, how you doing, Pat? It's been a while. Calling from the far north of Yukon right now.
Oh, very nice. Well, thanks for being
with
us.
I'm up here working, usually at Maple Ridge, but I still feel that the Flames are working the plan that Conroy said at the beginning of the year. And I was thinking back to like 82 when they got knocked out in a surprise by the Canucks. And it was probably a very low point right after they moved to Calgary, of course. But they were waiting for the young guys like Vernon Roberts, Neuendijk, McInnes. They were just starting their journey, right? And it took a few years to get it in there. And that's where the Flames are operating right now. We got a lot of good, young, solid players. And the caller before you was talking about the young defensemen. And I'm all for load management for that guy next year, if that's what it takes. Where he's kind of above the junior and the AHL, but are we sure that he's going to be able to put in a full season? And that's usually the hard part. And defensemen take a couple more years to develop than forwards, I feel. So I think, people are panicking in that. I mean, it was a bad game tonight for them. They got out-hustled. They got out-worked. They were missing two key guys. And none of them are superstars right now, but... It's still a hard working bunch, and I still have a positive feeling that some good results are going to come our way.
Well, and I mean, this is still just one game. I mean, even though it was a really ugly game and there's next to nothing to like about tonight's 60 minutes. It is still just one game. And the fact that you can count these stinkers on like one hand this year of how many just awful nights they've had is also probably a pretty good indication of the year Calgary's having. And you know what?
When we were talking in October, nobody thought they'd even be in this position. The vast majority of people were saying it's over already. And, you know, let's get a lottery pick or whatever. And, you know, the guys hear this, they play as a team, they got a good coach, they got some systems in place. It's a matter of just moving some pieces around, trying to find that combination that's going to work. The two young fellas from Philadelphia, I think, are going to do an amazing job next year for them. Once they get settled into Calgary, and that, I feel that they're going to do a great job. And there's going to be some nice free agent centers out there. And every team, probably half the teams, are looking for that number one center who's going to step up and be the McKinnon,
Well, I don't know if that guy is available in free agency. It's very rare that guy comes available.
No, but there are good centers out there that this season that will be available, and Calgary needs to look at it and say, okay, what's the age? When are we going to feel we're going to be ready? If not next year at this time, if we're in the same position, maybe change the strategy a little bit and maybe pick up a couple of expiring backs in order to make that push to a playoff spot at that time. I don't foresee any challenges with building a solid winner over the next 3-4 years. It's going to be amazing. I really believe that. And, you know, and I think Conroy has been working his buns off, trying to do everything. Not every trade hits, not every signing hits. But, you know, don't forget, we've also been slapped with some injuries, some severe injuries to people who were really making a difference at the beginning of the year, you know. So I think it's just, you know, keep the faith and move on. But I do have a question on a young fellow from the OHL, the defenseman. If he plays 10 games next year, that burns a year of his contract, correct, of the entry-level contract?
That is correct, yep.
Okay, now what if they load management and it takes him 20 games to put him into 10 games? Is that the same or does that change?
If he stayed with the team all year and only played 9 out of 82, his contract wouldn't start.
Okay. So, so if it takes due to injury or, you know, displacement and that, because, I mean, just from the sounds of it, I mean, this kid's going to be amazing. You know, we haven't had...
It's not ideal, but I think even if he is ready-ish, you've got to play him in the NHL. And I think you have to...
Well, of course.
I think you have to be willing to live with the mistakes. I think you have to be willing to live with the growing pains. And I think you have to be willing to sit him here and there when, you know, maybe you're worried about the body breaking down a little bit or fatigue or, you know, whatever the case may be, and do a little bit of load management. But, you know, if he spends an entire season with the Flames next year and say he plays, I don't know, 50 of 82 and he's healthy the entire year and he gets healthy scratch for 32, not even for performance reasons as much as just for development reasons. I think that's better than him playing an entire year with his eyes closed in the Ontario League as a 19-year-old.
You know what? And I agree with you 100%. And what you referred to at the beginning, the living with the mistakes and miscues and all that stuff. Hey, veterans make those same mistakes too, right? And we scratch our head, right? So, you know, just tell the people to keep the faith, guys. The Flames are you know, ahead of where they're supposed to be. And yes, they're tired. Yes, they're injured. And, you know, at the end of the year, we'll look at it and decide, you know, how they're going to move forward, right? So I have full faith in where they're moving right now.
Well, good stuff. I appreciate the call tonight, Niels. You have yourself a great night.
You as well, Pat, and keep up the great work. You guys have been covering this, and you do a great job, and I really appreciate it. It's nice to listen to when you're away from home, and you can pick it up on your Rogers phone and enjoy the talk. So thank you.
Thank you, Niels. I appreciate that, my friend. Be well. Hey, we'll talk soon. Let's say hello. Phone lines are open. We got a couple lines open if you want to chat tonight following a 6-2 loss in Toronto. 403-240-4444. It's your Flames Talk post-game show. Anand is up next. Hello, Anand.
Good evening, buddy. Happy St. Patrick's Day. How are you this evening?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just a few quick shout-outs I would like to get out of the way. I heard my classmate Noah Abel is working with you at the Downtown Studio tonight, so shout-out to Noah Abel. And then secondly, Cam Hughes as well. Cam Hughes, it was good to see you during one of the Calgary Canucks games. So if I may quickly, Pat, as well, Calgary Canucks are headed to playoff championships starting Friday. So if anybody is able to come out to the Maxwell, come do. I'm a color commentator for Calgary Canucks. I just wanted to say that quickly.
Okay, go Canucks. That's where I got my start.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, hopefully I see you at a game too if you're able to, Pat. But yeah. Yeah, tough loss tonight. Do you think that goal that was called off of Morgan Frost is where the game took a turn for the worse, or do you think it was lopsided at the beginning itself?
Well, I mean, the first period was an absolute rout, but it was 1-1. I mean, Toronto was so much better than Calgary was in the first period. High dangers were 10-1, and somehow Rasmus Anderson tied it in the final minute, and the Flames were square after 20. There was no way outside of the play of Dustin Wolf they should have been square, but they were. And so what you would have liked to see is, okay, take that, realize you played a pretty junk period, and be better in the second. Well, they start by taking a silly hooking penalty as Nazem Kadri puts Toronto on the power play. Okay, Nylander scores with an absolute bomb to make it 2-1. The Flames are still right in it, and then they score that goal. And yes, I do think it was a little deflating, but it didn't really take the wind out of their sails as much as it could have. It wasn't until that the 3-1 goal that I felt like things really started to go the other way. That's when the Flames, I felt, lost their composure, not after the disallowed goal. Yes, that does maybe kill any momentum the Flames might have had, but you know, they still had lots of zone time with 97 seconds left on the power play after that goal got disallowed. So I don't know. I thought that more the bad play and the defensive miscue on the 3-1 goal was the reason that things kind of got out of hand, and then some silly penalties and two more power play goals, and this turned into a blowout.
Gotcha. Yeah, fair enough. Another question. I know a couple of callers asked this already, but what have you thought of Sharangovich lately? And do you think we'll see any changes when it comes to Zari, when Zari is ready to return tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, Sharangovich is fighting it and has not been very good at all. And I think that my guess is they will move Zari to center and Sharangovich back to the wing, and that's exactly what I think they should do.
All right, gotcha. And do you think they'll go with Vlada tomorrow, considering how they have done back-to-back as of late?
What's that?
Do you think they'll go with Dan Vladar starting tomorrow?
I have no idea what they're going to do. I really don't. I would go Vladar. That's what I would do. I really don't know, because they pulled a goalie in-game for the first time this season. I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know which way Ryan Huska is going to go. But I know I would go to Vladar tomorrow.
All right, gotcha. Yeah, it was a frustrating one to watch. But again, like you said, I think you have a good point. Like, not many games you've seen this much frustrating. Maybe it was just an off night for them. Hopefully they can rebound back tomorrow. All right, thanks, Matt. Have a good night. And then, yeah, go Canucks, go. And talk to you tomorrow when we play the Rangers.
Thanks, Anand. And he means Calgary Canucks, not Vancouver Canucks. Just would like to make sure that we're very clear that Anand was not saying go Vancouver Canucks. He's talking about the Calgary Canucks, who are having a hell of a year in the Alberta Junior Hockey League. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444 following a Flames 6-2 loss on the road in Toronto. Let's say hello to Brad on the phone lines tonight. What's up, Brad?
Hey, Pat. Thanks for having me. A silly question. Watching hockey on TV, it seems that the Calgary Flames have the best position for their cameras. And I don't know if it's because of how low they are on the
That's part of it. But they've got a really lower bowl, and so the camera bay on the second bowl is lower than a lot of others. So that certainly helps.
Right. Now, do you have any idea or concept what the Flames are planning to do?
I sure do not. I've got nothing for you.
Okay. Is there any input? Because as I watch other games around the league, I find it really difficult in comparison to how great it is watching the Flames. It seems like you're up, like, you know,
input from
three
who?
Levels.
Input from who?
Well, like the media. Like, are you?
Oh,
guys,
like, do
allowed
I
to
have
say,
it?
Hey.
Do you know what they would say if I went up to the Flames upper management, the CSAC upper management, and I was like, "Hey, have I got some ideas for you?" They'd be like, okay, have a nice day. And then they'd be like, who the hell was that idiot? And what was he doing in my office?
Okay.
No, I can tell you that I have a 0.000% say in anything that'll be done at the new arena.
Well, and it's not so much that they're like thinking, hey, I want to ask Pat what he thinks. I just mean like,
no, and I know, but general. No, they're not, they have not yet pulled us on that. Don't think they will.
Okay. All right. Well, if anybody mentions anything, they do have it great. They've got it down now. That's my input. All right.
All right. You have a good night, Brad.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay,
take it easy.
Hey, I like it. I'll sometimes a little weird off topic. If we're going to go way off the rails, sometimes let's keep it game focused for 90 seconds. If you want to talk about the camera angles, we can probably do that. Sometimes, like, I want to talk about Toronto or like, let's get into right now whether or not the Florida Panthers should be employing their fortune. Like, okay, that one probably doesn't. I want to talk about the World Junior team. Okay, we'll probably save that for another show. That one, I think we can take for 90 seconds on the off topic. It is your Flames Talk postgame show. We've got a few lines open right now. If you want to chat, give us a call, 403-240-4444. Keep your texts coming. Lots of texts still to get to at 960-960. One more trip inside the locker room now following a 6-2 loss on the road in Toronto. Let's hear from defenseman Rasmus Anderson. He scored one of the two goals for the Flames tonight. Here is Rasmus postgame tonight.
You know, what did you make of just the night overall and when it started to kind of get away from the group?
I mean, special teams. It's easy as that. I mean, 5-on-5, I think, you know, we're playing with them all night and, you know, we're creating a lot in 5-on-5, and but, you know, special teams, we just absolutely shit the bet today.
I guess Weeks talked about, you know, you go into the first period, your first intermission, you still maybe feel pretty good about, you know, the positioning. And maybe just describe kind of what that feeling was going into the second.
We had a good feeling. We tied the game with a minute and a half left in the first period, and then we started taking penalty. They start scoring, and, you know, our power play, sure, we scored one, but it was deemed offside. But special teams, this game came down to special teams, and we just weren't good in special teams today.
How much is there a shift in that goal that gets called back? I mean, what does it do in the game in terms of...
Not really. I mean, just get back out there, try to get another one. I think the game is 2-1 at that point. We're right in it, and, you know, take a penalty, and they score. We take a penalty, they score. We take a penalty, they score. You can't beat this team with... I don't even know how many penalties we had, but I don't even know if we killed off a single one. So you can't beat this team where... or your PK doesn't show up.
Yeah, and Raz is right. They did not kill off a penalty tonight. 0-for-3 on the penalty kill were the Flames this evening. Okay, last call for phone calls. If you want to chime in, now's the time to do so. If you're on hold, stay there, but it's your last call to get on hold at 403-240-4444 and keep your text coming at 960-960. Flames lose this one 6-2 on the road in Toronto. It's Steinberg along with you. Flames Talk postgame on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts and live right here. This is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Flames Talk postgame show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, your final score tonight. Flames lose it 6-2 on the road in Toronto. Flames Talk postgame is underway. Well underway. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Back to the text line we go at 960-960, where Wedley says, but, Pat, Backlund doesn't score. Pat, we won't miss him. I need more Kermit and Fozzie voice after that beatdown. That's disappointed Wedley in Bridalwood.
Oh, Wedley.
I can't. My voice is a little hoarse right now, so my...
Kermit the Frog, Piggy, Wedley.
Not bad. That's more Kermit than Fozzie. This from Ash. I had high hopes for the Frost line today, but they didn't appear to gel. What are your thoughts on the Flames using Klapka on the power play? Well, in the absence of Zeri, I didn't mind them trying Klapka for a big body, but I do think I would bump Klapka for Zeri when he comes back on Tuesday. Larry says, Pat, after another loss with no offense, I'd really like to hear what you think about this team, an honest critique. I think this team is a hardworking group that never skirts your, or very, very rarely skirts the effort. They play a very certain brand of hockey that I think is their best brand of hockey that is going to give them a chance to win games in this league and to potentially sneak into the playoffs. I think they rely heavily on goaltending and have gotten spectacular goaltending for the vast majority of the season from Dustin Wolf. Offensively, they've got very little pop. This is an extremely offensively challenged team to begin with, and the brand of hockey that they're playing, like it or love it, does not foster more offense. So I think that this is going to be a team that continues to have a lot of trouble generating offense. I think in the first half of the season, this team had some pretty strong defensive metrics. They didn't give up a lot. That has started to slip. in the second half of the season, and their defensive metrics have really started to come back down to earth. I think that's been exacerbated the last couple of games without Michael Backlund. But, you know, for the first October, November, December, this team was a pretty buttoned up group at 5-on-5. They didn't allow a whole lot. They didn't, you know, they didn't spend huge swaths of time defending in their own zone. You know, kind of as the season has played out, that trend has started to reverse. They are now no longer even in the top half of teams in terms of what they're limiting in high danger chances. So not only do they have a hard time generating offense in the second half of the season, and this was not the case in the first half when their defensive off the puck metrics were strong, in the second half of the season, that has really reversed. And they've been quite horrid, I would say, in their defensive metrics in the back half of the season. I mean, if I'm being perfectly honest, it's been quite bad. It was quite good in the first half of the season. It's been the opposite in the second half. And as a result, their overall season-long defensive metrics have them in the bottom half of the NHL. So that's what I would say. This team has been buoyed more than anything else by spectacular goaltending. I understand the brand of hockey they play. And I do think that it remains their best way of winning games, even though it does choke off a lot of their offense. I still think, and especially now that we're 66 games into the season, you're not getting a system change now. But I would say that this is a team that has been propped up by outstanding goaltending. Thanks to Dustin Wolf, they have gotten some strong defensive work in the first half of the season that helped them. They have been living on their cushion through the first six games all year long. Since their 5-0-1 start, they are a 500 hockey team. They are now below 500 in the month of the calendar year of 2025. There's a team that we didn't expect a whole lot from. We just didn't know what their goaltending was going to be. Well, you throw in elite goaltending from Dustin Wolf, and it can take a team that does not really have good metrics anywhere else and turn them into a competitive group. And that's what Dustin Wolf, I think, has really done this year. It's why, to me, Dustin Wolf is the best rookie in the NHL. It's why, to me, Dustin Wolf should be in the Vezina Trophy conversation. That's how good he's been this year, even with this frustrating effort against the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. And that would be my honest assessment. 66 games in with 16 games to go. Honestly, and that, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but that would be my honest assessment of them. And Dustin Wolf has probably been good for like 7, 8, 9 standings points on his own, which you take those away, they get replacement level or NHL average goaltending. And they're not a playoff team this year. And, you know, probably we're not having the conversation about them losing that top 10 pick. And that's okay for two reasons. Number one, that's okay because Dustin Wolf is a massive part of this team's future. So if he's their best player, you're okay with that. Also, that's okay because we weren't expecting this team to be a playoff team this year. We were expecting this group to fight their asses off, play hard, but probably not have the same talent that other teams do. Wolf has been able to close that gap. So even though their metrics aren't super impressive, especially over the last couple of months, I'm not super critical of it because of, you know, what the expectations actually were and what this group is, and the fact that this is not just about this season. This is a plan that is far larger than just the 24-25 season. Last thing I'll say is they are getting, I think, outstanding contributions from both Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri this year, and those can't be understated either. Tim and Hillhurst says, before the game turned into a blowout, the Flames' two power plays in the first period were brutal, painful dropbacks, and then once in the zone, perimeter play ending in a high slot pass to a player that is covered long before the pass arrived. Not remotely good enough. I actually have that written down. The power plays were pretty pedestrian in the first period for the Flames. This reads, so sad they didn't play better in front of Wolf. I feel for him. An opportunity to show how good he is and very little support this time around. He did make some spectacular saves in the first period. Too bad it went the way it did for Wolf's sake. All eyes were watching tonight. Chris in Edmonton says offside challenges should only be allowed for 15 seconds after the infraction. Once it passes 15 seconds, too bad. I mean, that is not the rule. It's the offensive the offensive zone shift. So if it happened 45 seconds prior and the puck's in for 45 seconds and doesn't come out, then you can still challenge the offside because they're challenging the entry, and the entry, of course, would lead to the possession. Whether you like it or not, that's what the rule is. Aaron in Bragg Creek, this is wild card chase life, something Calgary knows too well. I know we should be happy for the teams we're not and for all the future capacity, but why Toronto? Nasty, just nasty. This reads, it's time to face facts. The Flames are the lowest scoring team in the entire NHL. They're only close to a playoff spot because of their goaltending. The team just does not have the skill to compete. I would have much rather seen Conroy sell at the deadline. Missing the playoffs by a few points doesn't help anyone. This from Dylan and Revy, who's back again. He says, I know you usually don't read text twice, but Sharon Govich reminds me of when the team refused to shut Monahan down when he needed surgeries on multiple body parts, hips and wrists, I believe. Again, I don't know if Sharon Govich is playing through anything that they should be shutting him down for. I don't know, so I can't comment fully credibly on that. Ken and Carstairs, kiss the season goodbye, and it can all be traced back to that game against the Canucks on Wednesday. Coaches or players or both, whoever thought it was a winning strategy to sit back and try to protect the 3-2 lead in the third against a team playing on back-to-back nights, allowing 1 point third period shots to be 16-1. They were 17-4, but whatever. Fire them all. Go Blues, go. I can't cheer for the Canucks or Utah. That comes from Ken in Carstairs. What else we got here at 960-960? This says Dustin Wolf is not winning the Calder. You should look at it realistically. NHL teams will figure him out. Let's see where he is in a year. Well, I don't know if he's going to win the Calder, but I do believe that he should win the Calder. If I had a vote, which I do not, then I would have him number one. Now, again, I do not have a vote in it, so all I can do is give you my opinion. But Dustin Wolf's metrics are up there even after tonight. Are up there with the very best goaltenders in the NHL. Not rookie goaltenders, but best goaltenders. With Connor Hellebuck, with Logan Thompson, with Andre Vasilevsky, with Lucas Dostal. Like, that's where Dustin Wolf's season has him in terms of adjusted save percentage, goals saved above expected, wins above replacement, standings points above replacement. Dustin Wolf is having an elite season, and so when you're a rookie and you're being placed with the best players at your position, that's why I think he should win the Calder. Whether or not he will, I have no control over that, and it's hard to guess. Tyler in Vermilion says, I don't understand how they overturned that offside call. Obviously, there are angles that the viewers can't see as it appeared inconclusive. What could have been 2-2 goes 3-1, and it basically was over from there. Well, again, everybody I've talked to has been like, yeah, it was off with the Flames. They're not really upset about it because they get those ones right now. I mean, there's no longer any interpretation. It's either offside or not offside. Unfortunately, we only got the two angles on the Amazon telecast. And that's not a criticism on the great job they do it on Amazon, but those are the two angles that we on the outside were able to see. I know for a fact there are multiple other angles inside the situation room that they see, and that's why I'm not too upset about that being an offside. About that being an overturned goal. But it's important to point out that it was like 7 minutes later that they made it 3-1. It's not like it went 2-1, 3-1 in the snap of a finger. It went 2-2 to 2-1, and the Flames still had some decent stretches there before the 3-1 goal from Nick Robertson, but it was the 3-1 goal about 7 minutes later that I thought really sucked the air out of their game. This reads from Brian in Calgary. Pat, it was another stinker. It was one stinker. It happens. On to the next one. I'm fascinated to see how Wolf steps up as a leader in response to this. Go Flames, go. Tomorrow is a new day. This from Danny in YYC again. Missed opportunity at the deadline to sell high on some vets. Putting the "we're not open for business" sign out was a mistake. Value of the vets goes down by each game in the offseason. This says, Pat, are the Flames better in Game 60 than they were in Game 10? That's from John. My answer is no, I don't believe they are for a few different reasons. As I mentioned a little earlier from Larry's text, they they've been quite poor in a lot of their metrics in the second half of the season. So I think they have fallen off the cliff in a lot of ways in some areas. Dustin Wolf is as good now as he was then, which is keeping them in this thing. Huberto and Kadri are as good now as they were then. But as a team, no, I think they were stronger in the earlier stages of the season than they are. So game 10 to game 66, I think they were stronger in game 10. I personally don't feel this team has gotten significantly better as the year has gone along. And now you also throw in no Michael Backlund in game 67 on Tuesday. Yeah, you take, you know, one of your two or three most important players, or at least important forwards, out of the mix. And yeah, you're not, they were healthy in game 10. They're not healthy now. And this from Mike. Pat, your honest assessment of the Flames is right on. This is year one of a 3 to 5 year plan. Patience, Flames fans. Great stuff on the text line at 960-960. Appreciate all your texts tonight. And time for one more call this evening following a Flames 6-2 loss in Toronto. This is your Flames Talk post-game show wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Pat Steinberg, and our last call goes to Evan tonight. What's up, Evan?
Hey, Pat. How are you, man?
I'm well. How are you?
Happy St. Patty's Day.
Thank you, brother.
Hopefully you get to go out and have yourself a beverage, perhaps.
No, I got a game tomorrow. I need to save this voice.
One beverage isn't going to kill anybody.
Plus, I'll get a workout in, get a skid say. I'll be good.
Good stuff. You know what? I don't want to talk too much about the game, to be honest with you. I think that's been kind of covered here. It was my first opportunity to kind of see the NHL on Prime type thing. I ended up going somewhere for a bite to eat and a beer, but it's interesting the way the sports media landscape is really changing here. I'm not a big fan of the streaming services for sports. A couple places we tried to watch the game at, they weren't carrying it just because they don't want to have that Prime subscription. People are kind of talking about the angles
one of my pet peeves is broadcasters criticizing other broadcasters publicly. Yeah. So I'm not going to do it because I think Prime is doing a very unique telecast. It's different than others. And so some think it's better, some think it's worse, whatever. I don't like to comment on those things because I think it's bad form for broadcasters to criticize other broadcasters, at least publicly.
No, I understand. For me, it's a little more of the challenges with access and kind of the fragmentation of just sports in general.
Sure, right? And it is the way things are going. I mean, Netflix has got the WWE now. Apple TV does the Friday Night Baseball in the majors. Monday Night Hockey on Amazon. Peacock does games in the NFL. This is the way it's going. And I'm not saying that it's going fully this way. I mean, Sportsnet is in year one of 11 and 12 year, or maybe they're both 11 year deals with the Flames and Oilers. So regular cable telecasts of sporting events aren't going anywhere either. You know, whether it's, you know, Fox and ESPN and CBS with their NFL games, and the NBA is signing some new big deals. Like the NHL is going to be redoing their Canadian broadcast deal shortly. That's for national games. And I mean, look what ESPN and TNT are doing in the States. So like regular television isn't going anywhere for sports, but streaming is definitely playing a part in the conversation now, and that won't be changing. And I mean, in this lifetime, is it all streaming? Probably not. I think television is still a pretty important medium. But you know, it is definitely a changing landscape, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't get to watch too much of the game. I was kind of excited for it. You know, I hate Toronto, and you only play them a couple times a year. But as soon as you saw that, it was starting to. The game was getting away from them. It's like, it is what it is. Tough travel for tough back-to-back games here. So it's not going to be an easy road trip. Wolf, what can you say? He's been a phenomenal goalie this year. We kind of seem to have caught lightning in a bottle with this guy early on. I wasn't expecting this level of performance this early for a rookie. He does look small, and that is not, you know, the difference between an AHL shooters and NHL shooters is not, it's not reared its ugly head for him, I'll tell you that much. So, other than that, what are you going to do? Blow it off and, you know, hopefully tomorrow's a better game.
Yeah, I mean, and they're going to have to be significantly better. The Rangers are not the same caliber of team that they were last year or the same caliber of team that the Maple Leafs are this year, but that's a desperate Rangers team fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot. You got JT Miller in that lineup now. They've got to be significantly better. They play again like this. Maybe they don't lose 6-2, but they probably don't win.
Well, what are you going to do? That's why they play the games for, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, you have yourself a pleasant evening. It's a little bit of an earlier night than you're probably used to, so hopefully you make the most of it.
Ev, good to hear from you, pal. We'll talk soon.
Ciao.
Okay, man. And that'll wrap us up on the phone lines this evening following a 6-2 loss in Toronto. Thanks for all your phone calls. Thanks for all your texts on this Monday night. It's time for tonight's final summary. Here's how tonight went at Scotiabank Arena in downtown Toronto. Maple Leafs never trailed. They opened the scoring 1:47 into the first period. Max Domi starts off a good night for himself with his sixth of the year. Domi from Simone Benoit and Oliver Ekman-Larsson made it 1-0 at 1:47. Now the Flames, who were outplayed the entire first period, found a way to get into the intermission all square in the final minute of the first period. Rasmus Anderson rips home his ninth of the year on a beautiful pass from Jonathan Huberdeau. Anderson from Huberdeau and Martin Pospisil at 19-12. We had a 1-1 tie after 20 minutes of play, but then things completely unraveled on Calgary in the second period. Maple Leafs make it 2-1 on a William Nylander goal early in the middle frame. Power play marker for Nylander, his 38th from Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews. That made it 2-1. The eventual game-winning goal comes off the stick of Nick Robertson at 9:34 to make it 3-1. Robertson's 12th from Domi and Ekman-Larsson. And then the penalty kill has a dreadful finish to the second period. Power play goal from Austin Matthews at 15:41 makes it 4-1 Maple Leafs. Number 25 for Matthews from Nylander and Marner. And then just over 3 minutes later, another power play goal from Matthews to turn this into a blowout. His second of the period, 26th of the year from Matthew Nye and Nylander at 18:54. Three power play goals in the second period helped Toronto to a 5-1 lead after 40. They'd make it 6-1 early in the third. Bobby McMahon's 18th from Morgan Riley and Cali Yarncroke at 3:03. By the way, that goal was scored on Dan Vladar because Dustin Wolf was pulled at the end of the second period. He allowed 21 goals on 26 shots. Vladar comes in cold, does allow a goal on his first shot. McMahon from Riley and Yarncroke at 3:03 to make it 6-1. Flames get one back in the final minute of the third. A little bit of a pinball machine ends up getting Kevin Ball his third of the year. Ball from Dryden Hunt and Yegor Sharankovich at 19:12 gets us to our 6-2 final score. Final shots, 29-25. In favor of Toronto. Calgary finishes the night 0-4 on the power play. Toronto 3-3 with the power play this evening. Three stars in the building, all Maple Leafs as you'd expect. Number three star was Max Domi. Number two, William Nylander. And her number one star with a couple of goals tonight was Austin Matthews. Hardest working Flame as selected by Megan Mickelson tonight was Mackenzie Weegar. With the loss, Flames fall to 30-25-11. They're back in action tomorrow, Tuesday, on the road against the New York Rangers, while Toronto improves to 40-24-3. They're back in action Wednesday at home to Colorado. That is your final summary. And now for everyone involved in Flames hockey tonight, for our broadcast crew of Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson, for our co-host Aaron Vickers, and for our outstanding producers, we had Cam Hughes and Noah Bell with us in this game tonight. My name is Pat Steinberg. Next up for the Flames, by the way, my name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll do it for our Flames Talk postgame show, which is available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next up for the Flames, Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden against the New York Rangers. It's a 5 o'clock faceoff, which means we're on the air at 4 o'clock with your Calgary Flames warm-up. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Final score from Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. Flames fall 6-2 to the Maple Leafs. This has been your Flames Talk postgame show, available wherever you get your podcasts. And this has been Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.